This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, visiting with Professor Evan Ellis, the Latin American research professor of the U.S. Army War College Institute of Strategic Studies. And we turn to Honduras. This is Central America, where we have an election. At the same time, we have news from the United States within these last weeks. March 2021, the sentencing day for Juan Antonio Hernandez, a former Honduran congressman and the brother of the president of Honduras, who is now leaving office. He's known affectionately as J.O.H., Juan Orlando Hernandez. I mention this because Tony Hernandez, the congressman now convicted and sentenced to many years for narco-trafficking, is not only the brother of Mr. Hernandez, but in all of the preparations for the trial and all of the testimony by informants over these years, no one's ever made the case that the president of Honduras knew nothing about this or was completely divorced from it. What I learned is that Honduras has been a way station for narco-trafficking into North America for decades, filled with landing strips that are very romantic if you're Humphrey Bogart and making a movie about across the Pacific. But at the same time, this is not the land of the Banana Republic. O. Henry named it that many years ago in a short story. This is the land of the narco-traficos bringing in business that is vital to Tegucigalpa and vital to the whole region, Central America. This is not an isolated state. So having given you that romantic preparation, Professor, what is the thinking about the election in Honduras? Is this a turn away from the narco traffickers, or is this an endorsement of more of the same? Not to leave out the fact that Honduras is part of the Northern Triangle and one of the drivers for the caravans pressing the U.S. border.
It's a great question, John. And once again, like so many other places in the region where you see citizen frustration with narco trafficking and corruption and endemic poverty and inequality, you see citizens willing to turn to more radical solutions. And so right now, the front runner in the election is the wife of a former president, Mel Zelaya, a woman by the name of Xiomara Castro, head of a movement called Libre or Free, which really is seen as a radical leftist populist movement. It looked like they were behind in the recent polls. There was really a kind of a four-way run in Honduras until the other major leftist candidate, TV sportscaster Salvador Nasralla, chose to put his fortunes in with Xiomara Castro as the vice president. So it now appears that unless there's a radical shift, that in those elections on the 28th of November, coming up very soon here, that Castro will probably be elected and will take politics in a very different direction. Again, the other candidates were largely tainted in one way or another with the narco trafficking, which is just endemic across the country. And as you pointed out, one of the things that's happened in Honduras, as in El Salvador and in Guatemala and other parts in the region, is those flows of cocaine and associated money that largely have gone from Colombia's the source zone country through the Caribbean and through Central America going towards the United States have really just contaminated society at all levels, government, and particularly Honduras. And so in many ways, it was no surprise that not only Juan Orlando's brother, Tony Hernandez, who was indicted and convicted of those ties, but the other major politicians, as well as the reasonable suspicions against the previous president, Pepe Lobo, as well as his wife, as well as his son, all either indicted or convicted on narco trafficking charges. And indeed, our Justice Department has actually indicated that the president, Juan Orlando, is under investigation for serious charges, although not yet convicted. And indeed, that has led many in the Biden administration to suggest that they will try to work around the president just because of him being tainted. On the one hand, we have a very difficult problem with the contamination of Honduran society by narco dollars and by corruption in general. On the other hand, we have a response that is going to take Honduras probably very radically to the left with Xiomara Castro, and that will take us out of the frying pan and into the fire, so to speak.
Yes, this is the lady or the tiger, really, the choice here, what we have.
Indeed.
Yes, they're fine. So let's go into national security, because that suggested across this landscape, national security threat, clearly the narco trafficking, national security threat, clearly the migrants, caravans from the Northern Triangle, El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala. National security threat, because if I follow through on the logic that candidate Castro becomes the president of the country, this would mean an administration that is entirely sympathetic with what we now see as a pattern. Havana, Caracas, Quito, and there's reason to believe that there are other countries participating and cheering this on. I mentioned Mexico City because the president of Mexico has been sympathetic to these statements by Maduro, by Havana, by even Castillo, but certainly Evo Morales. So Central America going radical left, going left. I'll just say going hard left. Okay, I won't use adjectives that are in some way conclusive. Hard left. I think that that would be an embrace of where they are on the political spectrum. Does this change the picture for narco-trafficking or migration that threatens the U.S. sovereignty?
It absolutely does, John. Frankly, it's going to make the entire situation worse. And, you can see a strong root in the way this has played out in the past and in other places. So if you go to Bolivia under Evo Morales, where Morales cut ties, working relationships with the DEA and others, which really gave, added space for narco-trafficking there. Clearly, Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, the same thing. Part of the rise of the left there was to make a case against security cooperation and narco-trafficking cooperation, demonizing U.S. law enforcement. We've seen the same thing now with, as you mentioned, the leader of Mexico, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, AMLO, who just about 2 years ago passed a very worrisome national security law, making it very difficult, taking away immunity for U.S. operatives such as the DEA, making it much more difficult for us to cooperate in terms of intelligence exchanges and things on the ground. So in all likelihood, although frankly, Xiomara Castro has said some things that probably will be of liking to many in the region and in the Biden administration here in the U.S. in terms of trying to address some social injustice issues, in terms of resurrecting perhaps the old MASI, the anti-corruption commission in Honduras. The concern is that as we've seen again and again with other states that have turned to the radical left, that the a decreased security cooperation, even while giving the superficial impression of going after corruption and saying the right things on social justice issues, could actually create an open space, or at least a more open space, especially in that corridor which currently runs again from Colombia and Venezuela up through the Northern Triangle and then through Mexico to the United States. And again, as you pointed out, these things are all linked together, and so the extent to which that narco violence also leads to more corruption and less economic opportunity and more difficulty, I think we can only expect that the flow of migrants, which already Honduras is already one of the primary sources of that migration coming up to the U.S. borders, will continue to expand, or at least will continue. And frankly, things that are happening on the U.S. side with respect to some of the policies being considered or taken forward by the administration in terms of paths to citizenship and border issues. So you have both I think you're going to have a stronger push from the Northern Triangle, even despite the perhaps $4 billion that we've promised for the region, which will be complemented by a pull from U.S. policy. So I think certainly we're going to see the crisis of migration and migration pressures only get worse, and this will only move us deeper into that challenge.
Following the reporting in The New Yorker, a lengthy piece by John Lee Anderson, the distinguished journalist, I learned that overwhelmingly the people of Honduras don't want to be there, that the educated young people want to leave, that people who are on the land need to leave because of bad climate, bad management, bad governance. And certainly saying don't go, don't leave, stay where you are is – that is not something that you would consider responsible advice, given the conditions that we've just outlined. So the theme here, Professor, looks to be that the hard left is using democracy to end democracy. That's what it looks like. It looks like you have an election, one man, one vote, one time. And that once the hard left, again, I'm not trying to use a conclusive adjective. I'm trying to describe a spectrum. The hard left, sometimes known as populism, maybe that's a more attractive way of talking about it, understands that the U.S. and its allies have a reverence for democracy, for the vote of the people. And yet that vote of the people is being used right now to put into place adversaries of the United States of America and its democratic partners. Is there a discussion of this irony in Washington? Is there a way to address it without spending billions of dollars and certainly not issuing deployment of the military? Is there a way to reverse this? Because it's a war of ideas.
Well, there is certainly a discussion of this, John. The question is the way in which different countries are, in which the U.S. and the Democrats versus the Republicans and others are choosing to address this. As you know, the administration's solution is concentrated on looking at the root causes while trying to continue to make us a country that is open to controlled immigration. But in many ways, that sends one type of signal. Obviously, the Republicans in different ways have a different solution. But again, as you pointed out, this has been a consistent playbook that we've seen with Hugo Chavez, we've seen with Evo Morales and others. And at the core of the problem, John, is that corruption. It's not that Latin Americans do not believe in democracy. They want to believe in democracy. They want to believe in economic freedoms at their core. But so much of the experience that they've had with, at least in practice, countries that call themselves democracies has not been up to their hopes. And so, you know, that pushes them again and again when they finally vote a populist in. And frankly, again, as we've seen by Nayib Bukele in El Salvador, it's not just on the left. You have, you know, populists on the right. I mean, Bukele has moved to get rid of his attorney general and get rid of the Supreme Court justices who could, put him and his family at risk from corruption. He's not going to make the same mistake that, for example, Otto Perez Molina made in Guatemala, basically thinking that he could keep the investigations under control. So you do get populists on the left and in the right, but the problem particularly with populists on the left is that in the name of ideology, they, decrease cooperation with the United States and they increase cooperation with other actors as they come to power. So for example, Xiomara Castro in Honduras is promised that Honduras would recognize the People's Republic of China, which will open up doors to more, shady government to government deals there as they ramp up, that relationship. So it's really a very complex and an intractable problem, but at its root, it also has to do with the difficulty, the disillusionment of the people after so many bad experiences of actually defending democratic principles and institutions when a populist leader says, hey, just trust in me as I appoint new people and change the rules. And then by the time you try to deal with that, it's too late. And you have a situation as we see with, state control and rigged elections in a place like Venezuela or even worse, a place like Cuba.
I'm speaking with Professor Evan Ellis. He's the Latin American Research Professor, U.S. Army War College, Institute of Strategic Studies. We're looking at the elections, rolling elections through Latin America. We're going to turn to Cuba, where there are no elections and haven't been that we acknowledge for many decades. However, there are protests. Sometimes the protests are obvious. Sometimes they're behind closed doors because of fear. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.